This is Mark Strassman, reporter with California Politics Today. We're about to speak to Dana Cody, the executive director of the Life Legal Defense Foundation. Welcome back to California Politics Today.
Thank you for having me back, Mark.
We spoke late last week about a lawsuit that your foundation is bringing against the Independent Citizens Oversight Committee. Could you bring our new listeners up to date on who you're representing, what you're asking for in the suit, and where the case stands in the process right now?
Sure. We're representing People's Advocate and the National Tax Limitation Foundation, and we're asking the court to issue a writ of mandate because we assert, or the petitioners assert, that the act violates the California Constitution, Article 16, Section 3, by authorizing the sale of bonds and directing proceeds to be dispersed to the ICOC, an entity which is not under the exclusive management and control of the state, and that is the requirement of Article 16, Section 3.
Are you asking that the proposition be declared null and void, or are you just asking that they be enjoined from not spending any money, or do you want them to be their existence revoked, or what exactly are you asking for?
We're simply asking that any funding be stopped and that the ICOC be halted from organizing further. We're not asking the court to declare the bulk of the initiative, the stem cell research portion of it, unconstitutional. We're sticking strictly to the funding issue.
Okay. And where did you file your suit and when?
We filed our suit on the 22nd at the satellite office of the California Supreme Court, who then overnights it to the Supreme Court in San Francisco. So it's officially filed as of February the 23rd. And we filed a writ with the California Supreme Court asking for a peremptory writ in the first instance, because funding will start being distributed, we've heard, in May, and we want to ensure that that is stopped before anything is allocated.
So this peremptory writ of mandate that you've asked for would enjoin the ICOC from giving any money to anyone?
It would enjoin the ICOC from distributing grant funding, and it would enjoin the state petitioners, the governor, the treasurer, the controller, the lieutenant governor, all who have a part in this, from distributing any state funds to the ICOC as well.
Okay. I think $3 million has already been distributed by the state to the ICOC to get itself organized?
I believe that's correct, but we're wanting to stop the grant funding.
Okay.
The funding that would go to entities that the ICOC chooses to give grant funding to.
So you're not trying to touch the money that the state's already given to the ICOC to get itself organized?
No, and in fact, we say in our brief that one of the reasons that we're going directly to the California Supreme Court is we don't want to see the grant funding distributed, and, you can't put the genie back in the bottle.
Right. So in other words, that money's already been out of the bottle, but you want to stop any more money from coming.
Correct.
What are your requirements that you have to fulfill in terms of serving the respondents? As I understand it, the people asking for this relief are the petitioners, and the people who have to respond are the respondents?
Correct.
And do you need to serve them with notice of this case in any official way?
Yes, we do. In fact, the brief is filed with the proof of service, and we attempted to serve them on Tuesday the 22nd, the day we filed in Sacramento.
Now, by them, who all do you mean?
The ICOC, Robert Klein in his official capacity, and then the state petitioners, which would be the governor, the lieutenant governor, Phil Angelides, the treasurer, and Steve Wesley, the controller. All of the state respondents have been served. We've been unable to locate the ICOC or Robert Klein. The address that we had for them was apparently incorrect, and we've done a search on the Secretary of State's website, and there's nothing there as far as agent for service of process, or, they consider themselves to be a state agency. We don't, but there's nothing in the California portal either that gives an address for the ICOC.
Okay, now I understand from their press releases that the ICOC is going to be meeting in its regular next meeting at Stanford University and Fairchild Auditorium starting tomorrow morning, March 1st. Will you be able to serve them there?
We will if we can't find them today. We found an address in a press release on the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine website, so we're attempting to serve them there today, and if not, then we probably will send somebody down there tomorrow.
But you're saying that the four constitutional officers in California have been served?
Yes, they have.
Did you do that in one fell swoop by going to the Attorney General's office?
Actually, we had to give serve the Attorney General as well because we're challenging a state statute. So our process server just went to the five different offices.
And so all of those five constitutional officers of California have been served?
Yes, they have.
Now, do they have to talk to you now, or do they have to talk to the court?
They have to talk to the court. And in our brief, we discuss what's called the name has escaped me right now, PAMA notice.
Right.
PAMA is actually a case.
Right.
And what that case indicates is that when they have 10 days notice of the writ, that they then have sufficient time to respond. And we're thinking that perhaps it is 10 days, but in reading the case, it sounds like they can respond informally whenever they want, or the court will order a date to respond if the court decides to hear the writ.
So they can respond, do they have to respond within 10 days?
No, they just need to wait on the court.
Okay.
So sort of the procedure of what will happen is, first of all, the court will meet Wednesday and they'll decide whether or not they'll even hear our writ.
The California Supreme Court?
Correct.
Will meet Wednesday, you mean March 2nd?
Correct.
Okay, and they'll take notice of your case and decide what they're going to do.
Yeah, and they'll either deny our petition or they'll accept it, and then if they accept it, they'll notify all the respondents, you know, you must respond by such and such a date.
Okay.
We're asking, pursuant to PAMA notice, that it be within that 10-day time frame. So we'll see what date the court orders, but you know,
within 10 days after the court takes notice.
Correct.
So sometime 10 days after the site was by the 12th of March.
Correct.
If the court accepts it, if it doesn't, what are you going to do?
Well, if they deny the writ,
right.
We'll decide if we're going to go to the Court of Appeal, which I would imagine we probably will.
Okay. Now, I got a press release late yesterday from the ICOC/CIRM saying that they've added a special secret executive session to their meeting tomorrow to consider, among other things, your lawsuit. What do you make of that?
Well, they seem to indicate in their agenda that they have 10 days to respond. And so, you know, I'm glad they're considering what, you know, our writ and that they're taking it seriously. They consider themselves to be a state agency. We do not. A state agency is allowed under the open meeting laws to meet privately to discuss pending litigation.
Well, let me ask you about that. You say that they consider themselves a state agency, but you don't.
Right, and that's the basis of our writ.
Where and how have they indicated by word or deed that they do consider themselves to be a state agency?
Well, I noticed when I was searching for their address to serve them that they have a link to, it was either the controller or the treasurer's website. So, you know, they're meeting with, working with state officials to get organized.
Their official website is on the California state website.
Right, it's CIRM.ca.gov.
Right. So you're saying that you don't believe that they're a state agency, even though they're on the website of the state of California.
Right. We're saying that they're not under the exclusive management and control of the state as required by the California Constitution, and therefore they shouldn't have access to taxpayer funding. They're just not an entity that's under the control of the state.
Now, there's another legal action underway in which Charles Halpern, a public interest attorney in Berkeley, and Philip Lee, a distinguished public health official, are asking the CIRM, the ICOC, to change their to let them speak at the meeting tomorrow in order to make the case that there ought to be a public forum to consider the proposals that Mr. Halpern and Dr. Lee are asking for. That would seem to indicate that they're not a state agency because they claim to be exempt from the conflict of interest and open meeting laws that Mr. Halpern and Dr. Lee want them to abide by.
Right.
So are they trying to have it both ways, do you think?
I think they are. I think they are. You know, it's just, I mean, I don't mean to be flippant about the case, but it is. It's just a money grab. I mean, in my opinion, if embryonic stem cell research was something that had promise research-wise, they would have no problem funding this privately. Venture capitalists, scientific community, they would have no problem funding it privately. But because it's not a proven research technique, adult stem cell research is, there's funding for that. The federal government will fund that. There have been strides. So, I mean, I think that what happened during the initiative campaign is that they wrote a 20,000-word initiative that nobody read. They had a lot of emotional ads saying, you know, please help me, I have a disease, I need a cure. And everybody wants people with diseases to have cures. But people bought into that sort of bumper sticker ad and voted in this institute. And all the while, the language is very clear. They are the Independent Citizens Oversight Committee. They have, the members are appointees or appointees of appointees or delegates of appointees. And the legislature has no authority to oversee what they do.
Would it be constitutionally, in your view, for the legislature to appropriate this money and oversee it as part of a government program run by the state?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm concerned with two issues here. I mean, admittedly, I have moral concerns about embryonic stem cell research, but I'm also a taxpayer, and I don't like state government or the federal government, for that matter, to be funding things that private entities should be funding.
Yes, go ahead.
So in my opinion, if the California voters want stem cell research, which, you know, supposedly a majority of them do, I think it's a hoax, but, you know, because of the way it was presented to the voter, but a majority of them do, let's say for sake of argument that a majority do want what the ICOC is purporting to provide.
Including embryonic stem cell research, which you're morally opposed to.
Right.
Okay.
So, you know, let's say that they're just funding adult stem cell research.
Right.
I don't want the state to fund that. I want it to be funded privately, and that's the point of what I was saying earlier. Adult stem cell research, umbilical cord stem cells, other types of adult stem cells, there have been diseases and cures found promise with adult stem cell research. So I still don't want the taxpayer to fund it. But if it shows promise, I mean, private enterprise will fund it.
Okay. Let me go back to something you said a minute or two ago and focus on it. The respondents in this case is the Independent Citizens Oversight Committee, which was established by Proposition 71. I've always parsed that phrase, Independent Citizens Oversight Committee, as that the citizens were independent. But it sounds from the way you're parsing it, and maybe that's how it should be done, is that this is a Citizens Oversight Committee that's independent, that the independence applies to the committee and not to the citizens, and that maybe more than just a nuance, because the argument that you're making is that as an independent entity, it's not entitled to be spending this money under the provisions of the California Constitution. Could you comment on that?
Yes. I mean, I think it is an independent entity apart from the citizens. For example, the fundamental decisions as to which entities will be awarded grant money are controlled by members of working groups.
Right.
And those working groups are appointed by the OCO, the ICOC.
Right.
And they're independent.
So they're right.
Of the legislature. I mean, the legislature can't touch this for 3 years, and then only by a 70% majority.
So you're saying, in fact, it's my understanding that the working groups will make recommendations which will almost certainly be accepted by the ICOC as a whole.
Right. And in fact, the way that it's written, recommendations will be made, and the ICOC really can't do a whole lot about it themselves.
So in fact, the working groups that will make the decisions about who gets the money are themselves independent of an entity which is also independent of the state legislature and the people of California.
Yes, that's exactly what we're arguing.
And you think on that basis they ought not to be entitled to spend $3 billion in taxpayer money?
No, absolutely not. And plus, you know, the people that are appointed, these 29 members, I mean, they have allegiances to disease advocacy groups, most of them. They don't even have to be from the state of California. So
there's a lot here.
Yeah,
we still need to talk.
It's every time I discuss this, I think, you know, this sounds so confusing. The average person listening, I mean, I'm sure they can understand what we're saying, but it kind of makes your eyes cross, because you sit down as a voter to read this initiative that was, you know, 20,000 words, and you can't make heads or tails of it unless you spend a monumental amount of time on it.
Would you say they went out of their way to make it obscure and difficult to understand?
I mean, this is purely my opinion.
Right.
But, yeah, I think they did. I mean, again, why sit down and read something that complicated? You can just look at the title and summary and say, okay, well, that's what it's all about. I mean, that's what most voters do anyway.
Right.
And, you know, to get into, you know, if you cross-referenced and looked at all the provisions of state law that they're exempt from,
right,
you know, you've got to read each one of those.
Right.
So it's much easier to just have people depend on title and summary, and just have these commercials that play to the emotions, and there you've got your initiative.
Okay. Let's wrap up with you summarizing where things stand and what your next steps are and what you're expecting from the other side in the next few days.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're just waiting on the court, and I think that if they hear our writ, I think the other side will argue that our case is like the California tobacco case, where the court said, you know, the entity created pursuant to that proposition was under the management control of the state due to various criteria. But, you know, we've spent our entire brief distinguishing that case, and we don't think they're at all alike. For example, the entity created in the tobacco case, there were guidelines as to how that money would be spent. None exist with...
Remind us briefly of what that case was and what entity was set up and what monies it was given to do what with?
I think it was Proposition 10. I'd have to go back and look at the case again. But there was a tax put on the purchase of cigarettes.
Right.
And a portion of that tax went to a committee created pursuant to the tobacco initiative. And I don't even remember the name of the committee at this point.
Right.
But they could then take this money and have educational programs to teach teens, for example, that smoking is hazardous to your health.
Right.
And there were specific guidelines within that initiative as to how the money should be spent. Then you take a look at the ICOC, and it simply says money will be spent for research.
So you're saying that in the case of the tobacco money, the tax on tobacco, the criteria according to which the money would be spent were specified in the initiative,
exactly.
Therefore voted on by the people of California, and therefore that tobacco education entity was under the control of the state.
Right, and there were checks and balances, and there was an audit, and that entity was accountable to the state. You know, let's say, for example, there's some question about the audit. Well, then there were accountability provisions. Unlike the ICOC, well, yeah, the state does an audit, but there's absolutely nothing they can do about anything they find the way that the initiative is written. There's
okay.
No teeth to
right.
The audit provision. So, and money can be used for research. I mean, that's pretty broad.
Right. One final procedural question. Are the respondents in this case, who essentially consist of two groupings, the constitutional officials of California and the ICOC and Mr. Klein in his capacity as chair of it, are they co-respondents? Are they all in this together? Or do they have to respond as a group, or can each of the elected officials respond on his own behalf and the ICOC on its, or what's the relationship among the respondents here?
Well, typically, the Attorney General would defend state defendants, and so the governor, the lieutenant governor, the controller, and the treasurer, perhaps the Attorney General will just mount one defense for them. I suppose technically, depending on what the Attorney General thinks of how the ICOC is supposed to be organized, he could say, you know, they're state defendants, I'm defending them too. Of course, we disagree with that strongly. But there are provisions within the initiative that allow the ICOC, if I'm remembering correctly, to hire attorneys. So I think that all of the respondents would, you know, if I was one of the respondents, I would want to talk to the other respondents and decide what my strategy would be. And, you know, I think it's up to each respondent to decide whether or not they want to have their own attorney or if they want to have some sort of a combined answer to the writ.
So the default would be that the Attorney General would represent himself and the other four elected officials, and presumably they'd consult with each other and decide what they wanted to do. But let's say the Republican governor and the three Democratic electeds have different takes on this.
Right.
Let's say even that some of them may agree with you. What happens then?
Well, they would have to have their own representation. I mean, I would think that depending on what the particular state officer thinks, you know, there might be some conflicts of interest there having the same representation.
Well, let's say Mr. Wesley or Mr. Angelides, who are the financial officers of the state, say, you know, your argument has merit. We want, you know, I mean, I don't know if they can file a friend of the brief case with you on your side, but are they able to say, you're right, we won't give them any money?
I would think so. I mean, I haven't even thought about that because, to be honest with you, I don't see that would ever happen. But
right.
I suppose if they did, yes, they would have that right as an elected official to represent the voters in that manner. So I, you know, I don't see why they couldn't if that's the position that they took.
Okay, I'm going to go ask them right now.
I hope you're right.
Okay, well, we'll see what happens. Let's get in touch again maybe tomorrow to see whether you've been able to serve Mr. Klein in the ICOC or whether you have to dramatically show up at the meeting there. You can get directions to Fairchild Auditorium pretty well from the Stanford University website.
On their website, I would think even.
Right. Okay, well, we'll see what happens. And thanks for talking to us today, and I look forward to talking to you some more to see what's going to happen here.
Okay, thank you, Mark. Thanks for your time.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.